the Almost Perfect Podcast.
Welcome to the Almost Perfect Podcast, a celebration of fuck-ups, failures, and falling flat on your face. This is a podcast that believes you can learn from experience, but that experience doesn't have to be your own. Hi, I'm Bob Perfect, and I'm a functional fuck-up. Let's learn from somebody else's mistakes, and today we're learning from John Shaban. Now, John is a musician. He is in a band called The Shabs, which is kind of named after himself. And he's also a solo act known as John Shaban, which was definitely named after himself. He also has an events company of sorts, a project, a platform called Sit the Folk Down, where he helps organize gigs in Cape Town for singer-songwriter types. So yeah, John's been in the music industry and scene for a very long time, and I've known him for a very long time, and he's been super instrumental in helping a lot of other people, but also in just being a musician in the music scene. He's been so constantly at it for such a very long time. It's finally starting to pay off, and it's really cool to see it happening. His band, The Shabs, have been touring Europe quite a few times now. They've gone there, I don't know exactly know how many times, but we do talk about it quite a bit. But in the podcast, John mentions just, you know, how they've gone over to Europe on their own steam quite a few times. Now they've been picked up by a label. They've got a team around them helping them now, and so it's making life a lot easier for them. And they're starting to, yeah, become a little bit of a thing, overseas at least. And, we get into the whole struggles of being a folk punk band in South Africa, about the ceilings that you can get to, and how it had hit John at some stages in his career, made him despondent. But they've found now that there's other places that they can go, and they can, actually make a decent run of it with their music. And so that's what they're doing at the moment. They're finding cool ways and cool places to go play with The Shabs. They've also just released a really dope new album. I finally got to listen to the whole thing. In the podcast, I hadn't listened to the whole thing. I'd only listened to the title track. It's called Can You Hear Us at the Back? And yeah, man, it's full of nostalgia, and it's full of feel-good vibes. It makes you really, yeah, just whilst some, like, there was another, I actually just wrote about it, I'll tell you about it now, another EP that was released just this week or last week by a band called Weed Dealer, and I just wrote about it for Bubblegum Club, and while they had, like, full-on nostalgia vibes with their sound and everything, it was, like, a pretty depressing release. Marty definitely didn't come with the, Martin Barrios, shout out to Martin, I know you're probably going to listen to this. He did not come with the, things are going to get better, things are going to be cool. But John always does. And that's what I love about this. Can You Hear Us at the Back? It's quite a positive experience, except the last song, which John mentions. But I mean, I guess it is still in its own right. It's good. There's positives to be taken from it. Anyway, yeah, so we talk about the album. We talk about Can You Hear Us at the Back? We talk about John's long career. He's played a lot of gigs, like a lot of gigs all around the world now. And he's, been able to open for really cool acts like Frank Turner, who have helped him, in his career in Europe. And just in general, it's been a journey, he's definitely done the folk singer journey, I guess. And it's coming to fruition. It's really working out for him. But also, it's starting to take a toll, and so he's, looking at his future, looking at the future with the band. They're all trying to figure out what it is, the smart way to keep doing this, to keep traveling, but at the same time, maximize their time, because traveling the world playing music is a dream, but it's also, a struggle. So we go through that, we discuss how hard it is, and also what an absolute dream it is, and how cool it is that they finally get to do this. Not finally, they've been doing it for a while, but after years and years and years of being in the music scene, of playing music, of starting a band in high school, and now really getting to live the dream that a lot of people have when they're younger and never really achieve. So it's cool to find out how they actually managed to do that. So I'm going to be chatting to John on this podcast in just a little bit. I want to say thank you for listening. And I want to say thank you to everyone who has gone and reviewed the podcast. We're doing a little competition at the moment. If you go and review, it's on iTunes. and send me the screenshot, you can win yourself free entry for yourself plus three friends and a 250 Rand bar tab to the Winston Pub. That's simple. You just got to go on iTunes, see where this podcast is, go to the review section and just say, hey, this is a podcast. Cool. There you go. You're entered. You don't even have to say it's a good podcast. You don't even have to say it's a bad color podcast. You don't even have to say it's a podcast. You can just say, here's a comment. I'd be cool with that. I don't mind. I'm not too stressed. It's just about the interaction. Of course, if you make a dope comment, then you would be dope by proxy. And I would appreciate you a lot more. So please go do that. Please go leave a review on iTunes. I would greatly appreciate that. It will help with the analytics. I am trying to make this a bit more of a thing. We got a lot of episodes now under our belt. I feel like it's coming together quite nicely. People are telling me it's coming together quite nicely. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I'm enjoying it, you know? This journey has been a really cool one, and I want to thank you for coming along for it. Even if this is your first time, thank you especially for, you know, taking a chance on this podcast. You can go and like us on Facebook if you haven't done that already. That's the Almost Perfect Podcast. We're also on Twitter at Almost _ Podcast. I'm on Instagram at Almost Perfect Bob, and also on Twitter at Bobness Monster. Other than that, we're on all the platforms. Go like, subscribe, share, do the things. And if you really want to support us, if you really, really dig the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/almostperfect. I just gave away a case of Poison City Brewing beer, the Durban Poison Lager. It's cannabis. That's what cannabis does to your brain, people. Nah, it's South Africa's first cannabis lager. And I had a case of it left over. They sponsored me for a little while when I was on the radio. And I wanted to give it away to one of you guys. So one of the 10 patrons has received it. Well, they haven't received it yet. They've been told they're going to receive it. And that person is Ryan Reno. So shout outs to Ryan Reno. You will be receiving yourself a case of Durban Poison. We're also doing some other giveaways. I need to announce some winners from last month. I haven't done that yet because I'm currently working on a comedy festival. Heat City Comedy Festival will be coming at you from the 30th of July to the 4th of August. More details coming about that pretty soon. You'll see. I'll definitely be telling you all about that. But yeah, other than that, thank you so much for tuning in, for listening in, for hitting play, and for spending the next little hour and a bit with us. Here comes the Almost Perfect Podcast with John Shabun.
Mostly I'm a full-time gigging and touring musician.
Yeah.
Solo as John Shabun, and then I've got a band called The Shabs. And then on the side, I run a little business called Sit the Folk Down. And okay. We do small-scale events, live music-orientated work around Cape Town and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and so obviously the business side is there for when the gigs aren't going as well as you'd like.
Yeah, it's also just like, it's also about creating like a healthy little scene, you know, in Cape Town. It's mostly around the kind of more singer-songwriter circuit, providing up-and-coming musicians like solid little platforms to kind of launch off. We have worked a lot with established artists as well, just kind of, we're a pop-up venue in a sense, you know, like just creating cool spaces where people can play to audiences that want to listen and not fighting the bar or, you know what I mean?
You love your folk music. You play folk music.
Yeah.
The Shabs is more of a folk punk band. Mm. And so Sit the Folk Down, it all makes sense.
Yeah, started out as just literally like another opportunity for artists to play in a cool space. And then over the years, it's grown into like a little bit more of a business where we are still doing our pop-up events, which are our kind of like passion projects. And then we've got like a management division, booking division. We do like all sorts of facilitation for more corporate stuff and whatever. But yeah, basically it's just about kind of keeping live music alive in South Africa, where we know it's a tough scene, you know?
How's the Cape Town scene at the moment? Because, from what I see from like, you know, checking out on Facebook and everything like that, you've always seemed to like be busy, have gigs and stuff.
Yeah.
But then I guess they're not always well supported, are they?
I mean, I'm lucky in the fact that I've been doing this for almost 2 decades, you know?
Yeah.
So
we'll discuss the whole history soon.
So the network's big and the opportunities are there to work with people I've been working with for a long time. A lot of what we do is just us doing it ourselves and finding, and this is with the band as well, like we just find a cool space. You know, there are not that many venues around that are kitted out for live music. Luckily, we've got access to the gear and, you know, the database, and we just kind of find a cool space and we do our own events, which is obviously a nice position to be in, but I can't imagine what it must be like to be a person who's starting out in South African music scene at the moment. You know, like, I mean, even when I met you, however many years ago, 12 years ago, whenever Captain Stew came here for the first time, I mean, we came to Durban and we played 10 shows in like 9 nights or something. I mean, in 12 nights.
Yeah, I mean, there were venues then, but also a lot of those were DIY shows.
Yeah, no, totally. They were DIY shows, and I totally understand that that culture's kind of like lived and died with us, and the new generation, like the next generation, isn't really that active in that scene.
I've spoken with some other people about this topic before. What do you think that is? Why do you think this new generation doesn't have that same ethos? Because it's not like anyone's doing it for them, you know? They're just playing less than, like, the scene does seem completely different to how it used to be.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's a complicated one because it was, like, pre-Facebook and pre-social media, pre-the internet being such an accessible way to discover music. Your kind of experience with live music was very kind of like, I go and watch a band live, you know?
Yeah.
And if I want their music, I got to physically buy a CD. There was no such thing as iTunes or
We did have MySpace, was kind of like the time period where, like, I think things really popped off hard because it enabled things a little bit. Like, you know, you knew about the show because people were talking about it online.
Yeah.
And so it made it even more hyped up. Before that, you know, you'd get flyers handed to you.
Totally.
And that's how you would know. Or you'd hear about the show at, like, you'd go to a show the previous week and someone would say, hey, this is the show happening next week.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, well, I guess I'm doing that next week.
You know, we were younger. We had more energy. you know, just in general, like, those little factors, like, help. And I didn't really, I try not to overthink these things. I don't really understand why the next kind of wave of musicians or whatever aren't really in the same kind of, what's the word? They don't have the same strategies as we had back in the day. I don't really know why those things happen, why they don't happen. But, you know, there's all sorts of things that you got to decide nowadays as a musician. And I've been talking about this quite a lot with people. With things like streaming, so kind of like that's like the new thing, you know?
It's
You want to listen to music. You listen to it. It's very fleeting. And there are all these different kind of theories on how musicians and producers and whatever should try and engage with their audiences. But, you know, like, for us as an old school, in inverted commas, as an old school kind of live act, what we want is to put music out there. Obviously, it's amazing for us that all of a sudden people around the entire world can listen to our stuff within a day of us releasing it. But we want feet through the door, you know? Other bands aren't necessarily on that same path. And, like, that kind of culture didn't exist when we started out as a band, you know?
Yeah, I mean, some bands made it from album sales, but not really. And even then, you know, those album sales actually covered the expenses of the album.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
So it's always been a tour-based model.
Yeah.
But these days, I guess you have more opportunity almost to make money from your bedroom.
Yeah, hundreds. I mean, and I totally respect that. And I love the idea of our music.
I'm not knocking it at all.
Our music just being so easy to get hold of. I mean, that's like a game changer. And it's had a big kind of impact for us in Europe. I mean,
I was gonna say, it's probably led to you traveling to Europe.
Yeah, I mean, if we look at our Spotify analytics, I mean, the top 5 countries aren't South Africa, you know, and we're from South Africa. So it's interesting how it all works.
You're not the only artist to have that going on for them in South Africa. But that's what's cool now, is that the internet's at least opened that up. It's given you the opportunity now that you can go, hey, I mean, bands were kind of doing this back in the day, but now you've got real analytics, you know, proper like stats saying this many people are listening to us in this country. If we go there, they're going to want to see us live.
Yeah, totally.
Like, whereas before, you didn't necessarily have that if you didn't have a record label, if you didn't have a management team, like, you know, doing research, scouring the like world, busy going, like checking in with people, you know, like you had record sales that you could literally check up.
Yeah.
But that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, it is. It's really interesting though. And we're firm believers in, like, you have to adapt with the times, you know? Like, so many other musicians are so despondent and grumpy about how things have gone, and, like, you know, you need 5,000 streams to generate the same income as you do selling a CD to a person, like, at a show, you know, like those kind of analogies and whatever. But, like, at the end of the day, we're so far away from having any control, you know. And you just got to adapt and just kind of figure out how to keep existing. Otherwise, you're just going to get angry. You can
still sell CDs at shows.
We do.
Like,
we
you do. Like, yeah. I've got your CDs in my cupboard, like right there. Because you've got, like, you had a lovely lyric book with the last CD. I don't know if you do with this one, but you had a gorgeous, like, well-packaged, a beautiful book. Like.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I haven't done that since. But, yeah, those little things, there are always ways to make your merch interesting and stuff. And I honestly feel that with the Shabs, especially, our merch game is quite strong. And it's also a really cool and important way to engage with the audience, you know, like after the show, you're there by the table selling the merch, speaking to people, and that's like a very important part of our ethos as a band. And like,
but that's what makes going to shows fun, and like, is that you do get to interact with the band, that you, it is it's a togetherness thing.
Yeah.
I mean, even when we've seen like the biggest international bands, like literally the biggest bands in the world have played in South Africa. And we've hung out with them, like, you know, after the show, like, you know, gone and ate bunny chows with them, like, gone and, like, you know, just had the best time, because that's the ethos of, like, the punk community almost.
Totally, you know, and also, like, that community in South Africa, I at least haven't seen anything similar around the rest of the world that I've been lucky enough to go to.
Like, really?
Yeah, the sense of community here in South Africa is really strong, and I think
like across the three cities, we're one scene.
Essentially. Yeah, and you know, like as we've been friends for over a decade, you know, and like and that's it's a very underrated part of like of our music scene here in this country, because you can go to Europe and you can, and obviously that's just like a way bigger scale there, and you can find a network of guys who like help each other out. So like there'll be this promoter who can book you a show in Prague, and then he's got a friend in Brno who can book you a show there. But yeah, they're not like, they wouldn't hang out, you know, go to a braai, like have a beer together.
You just reminded me of one braai that we had at Marty, Lee, and Matt's place.
The pool party.
Yeah.
Oh, man, what a day. That was great. But, you know, just in general, like, I think it's also, I mean, it does boil down to something as simple as, like, demographics and politics. Yeah. Like, there's just not enough of us in this country doing the same thing. So you kind of find each other, and the scene becomes very community orientated and driven. And you know, I would like to think that is like a really, really like important value in our band, is that like not letting go of that, you know, just kind of keeping that community kind of driven spirit alive, you know, whether it's here or,
I mean, that's also,
you know, like the guys we're playing with tonight, for instance, are old friends, yeah. You know, like, and it's going to be the Ryan same when we go to Joburg. Yeah. They're cousins. Like second cousins or something. Yeah. And, you know, we played our first gig with the City Bomb Misers maybe in like 2005 or something, you
know? That's with Captain Stu.
Yeah, Captain Stu. So, we go way back with these guys. I mean, I remember when I was still living with my folks like a million years ago, Rochi coming to stay at my parents' place. And yeah, I mean, it's amazing for us to like reconnect with these friends through music, share like this really cool experience of its tour that we're on at the moment and any other tour that we go on. And yeah, I mean, it's just like a really amazing way to just travel and like spend time with friends. No, it's not. It's not. But it's not as glamorous as people think it is.
Well, I mean, I think your life in particular isn't as glamorous because you're still doing the admin side of things as well.
Yeah, like, yeah. Although, have
you guys just been picked up? I see I'm getting emails from Plug.
Yes.
So,
well, we've been working with Warren at Plug for a while.
Yeah.
He's a great dude, and I love his kind of passion for live music in this country. But we also just recently signed with Just Music.
Oh, Just, yeah.
Yes, so they, Can You Hear Us at the Back, which is the new Shabs album, is being released through them.
How does that feel to...
It's been cool, man. Like, it was really kind of overwhelming at first. Everything just happened very quickly and organically, though. Basically, Ryan had connected with them through his playing on Sunny Fox's last record.
Oh, dope.
And she signed with Just Music.
Because Ryan Sessions,
like, yeah, Ryan, so Ryan does, yeah,
right. Amazing.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just talking as if everyone knows who everyone is.
That's
so,
what I'm here for. Just fill in
so
the details.
So Just Music and Ryan had this relationship already, and then we recorded this album. And Ryan sent it to Matthew Fink and said, listen, dude, as a mate... we've got this album. Is there any kind of direction you think we should specifically be pushing it in? Or can you give me some advice about it? And they listened to it and he came back and he was like, we love it. Like, we would be super interested in releasing it through Just Music. And we were like taken back. We were like, holy fuck, you know, like.
Yeah, because it's not their typical stuff, I would say.
No, definitely not. And like also, that wasn't even something that we were trying to like, you know,
just wanted some advice
or whatever. We just literally wanted some advice. So it happened quite naturally and organically. You know, the stuff that they can offer is stuff that like we can't do ourselves, you know? And that's not because we don't have the access, we just don't have the knowledge. Like, and the band has gotten to that point where those kind of things are important because, you know, we've existed at this level that we are and we're on a forward trajectory, but there are certain things that we're just not good at as people and as, like, as
a band. It's also, there's, sometimes there's only so far you can get on your own steam.
Yeah, totally.
And you guys have done a lot. I mean, you've gotten to Europe on your own steam.
Like, a few times.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the thing. It's not like, and that's also at least what shows them that you're worth banking on. Like, you're worth taking, you know, you're worth putting money into because you've shown that you can, you know, draw audiences around the world.
Yeah, well, they, I think they enjoy the fact that we do so much of the work ourselves already. You know?
So they don't have to work. And, this was set up, you know, just by you hitting me up.
It's totally. Yeah. But it's been a great experience so far, man. Like, just within the first, I mean, we're into month three now. It's been such an eye opener, like, seeing how the industry works on that level. Yeah, exactly. And we're really enjoying the experience and, yeah, looking forward to working with these guys for a while, you know?
So what's the deal with Can You Hear Us in the Back? I love the single. I haven't had a chance to hear the whole album yet. But the single, like, I actually got goosebumps when I heard it the first time. Because, like, but a lot of your music does that to me. But, yeah, like, it's obviously this emotive, like, song about, like, essentially, like, not giving up the punk dream.
Totally. I mean, the song itself is, like, it's a song about how we started this band when we were, like, teenagers. And you kind of, like, miss out on quite a lot of things in life when you commit to being a musician at such a young age, you know? Like, you finish school, lots of people go traveling, you know, take gap years, they do their studies, whatever it is, you know, there's weddings you miss, there's 21st birthdays you miss. There's, like, all these big things that you miss, but, you know, you do the same thing every weekend, essentially, you know? You're at a show, you're doing sound check, you're waiting around, you're driving somewhere.
That's not depressing at all.
But, I mean, we love it. So the song's not a negative message at all. No. It's just kind of like, you know, this kind of committed, like, hey, man, like, can you hear us in the back? I guess metaphorically is, like, trying to stand out, like, get noticed and whatever. And that's the title track of the album. The album's also called Can You Hear Us at the Back. And it was an amazing experience to record the album. We recorded it with this guy named Simon Ratcliffe, who was actually one of my lecturers at university, and I've always just kind of looked up to him as a...
You studied music,
yeah? I studied music, I dropped out, and then I went to go and study music production, sound engineering kind
of
stuff.
I remember a few of the Captus Two Cats were from UCT's music department.
Totally, yeah. And so Simon, working with him, his nickname's Fuzzy, he used to be in Lark, if you remember that band.
Sure, fuck yeah. Yeah. No, I love Lark.
So he was the bassist, the guy with the crazy
hair and stuff. Yeah, and he would play the headless bass.
And the upright bass, I think, in some songs.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
Anyway, Simon, he's like, you know, I've known him for a very long time since I was at Varsity, and he owns a studio called Sound and Motion, which is just kind of one of South Africa's top recording studios, and it always really seemed out of our grasp to be able to record there. And then we, through our travels in Europe and stuff, we kind of connected with these labels and whatever, and all the kind of potential that we saw to maybe release through an international label kind of kicked our asses into saying, like, let's record an international product, you know? And even though it didn't work out with those labels, which I think was a blessing in disguise at the end of the day, it really kind of forced us to go, like, you know, step it up a notch and, like, level up. So we recorded with Simon, which was fucking, like, the most incredible experience. We got out of it more than we thought we would. And the sound just, like, kind of matured itself into this generally a little bit more electric. It's not so much the acoustic folk
thing. So that's something I was going to bring up with the title track. It sounds like, but that I was thinking it's almost like a departure from John Shaban to The Shabs almost.
Yeah,
like,
well,
Shabs has always been.
Yeah, it is nice for me to be able to completely separate the repertoires, you know, which has happened a while ago, but also, like, the styles.
That's what I'm saying, stylistically.
Like, yeah, stylistically, the band has, like, you need to have something to work with, but it was very much like, how do we make this sound like we want it to sound, you know, like, as a group.
And this had definitely a more of a punkier feel than the folkier feel than
you Yeah, totally. I mean, on the album, well, just still a lot
just,
of the...
Just the one song, I can't say yeah, the yeah, whole yeah. thing, yeah.
No, I mean, I'd actually love to know what you think about the whole album, because I think there's a really good balance, and I think, like with any band, you have to try different things, you know? Like, if you just kind of stick with one formula, either you're going to get bored and despondent, or the audience is going to get bored. And you know, like we haven't changed the kind of core sound. We've just really just beefed it up a lot. And, yeah. You know, it was also like extra vocals. Yes. And then we had a lead guitarist who also played pedal steel. And we had like Lee from the Hogs play trumpet, and Willis, who was in Captain Stew, played trombone, and we had a clarinet player named Gareth Harvey.
Yeah, I saw
and then
your we had a cello. Show in Cape Town had yeah. most of those people there.
Yeah, so there was like a string section, and yeah, for Cape Town we played the full album. We haven't done that before, and I don't think we'll do it again. But it was really cool to like deliver it like we recorded it. You know, Richard, our lead guitarist, he actually lives in Hamburg in Germany. he recorded remotely. Sent us the parts. It's quite funny, like when we were recording, we were just kind of voice noting him ideas, and then he would like mess around with things, send them back to us. Back and forth was like, it was quite cool doing it like that. And
so how does it
he's
work
actually in
shows,
South
though?
Africa in the moment, so he's been playing the shows, yeah, but he toured around Europe with us as well.
So then what are you going to do when he goes back to Europe and you guys
oh we'll probably just go back to just playing without him. I mean, like, he adds a lot to the show, obviously, but the songs are the songs. Other songs.
Yeah, but so you're not going to get someone else to, you know, fill in for him?
I don't think so. I mean, like, we just logistically, it's tough to find that time to rehearse with people, and it's tough to be able to afford having extra members on the road and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, because then essentially your fee goes up when you take on an extra member.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, it has to. So
and then people are less likely to want to book you because they're like, oh, no, like, you know, I can't afford, like, yeah, you know, the extra $2,000.
Yeah, look, I mean, we're not a lead guitar driven band. You
no,
know? It's
no,
so,
not at all.
So that it adds like a lot of cool texture to the music, and it really does help having a second guitar sometimes. But it's not stuff that we can't deliver with just three of us, you know.
No, of course, it's just yeah, like it is a different show, and yeah, yeah, like. Because I did notice just that extra guitar sound on the new stuff, and I was going to ask you, like, is that the direction you guys are looking to go now?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we're very wary of the fact that, like, whatever we release, we have to be able to deliver live as well. You know, there's this kind of fine line between, like, just playing something... just recording something, like, you know, and overproducing it,
yeah,
to a certain extent where, like, you're never going to be able to recreate it live. But, I mean, essentially, we're a live band. That's what we're about. So those parts, some people might miss them, but I think majority-wise, like, no one will really know the difference as long as we put on a good show, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And you've been playing live shows for how long now?
This would be like 18 years, yeah.
So how did you get started in music? What was the beginning?
I played music throughout primary school. And then I kind of got into guitar towards the end of primary school. And the guitar is like by far one of the most social instruments, you know, like,
yeah.
You can't really like take out a saxophone at a braai, you know, or play it by yourself. Four people, it's like you got to be part of a band. So yeah, I don't know, I was kind of into more alternative stuff that I guess when you start gearing alternative music, it's generally through things like the radio. I mean, my parents didn't really have the best taste in music for that kind of thing, so yeah, I don't know, I can't really like pinpoint which bands kind of pushed me in that direction. And then I stumbled across a cassette once in the road when I was walking home from school. And it was an Anti-Flag tape.
No
way. That someone had taped themselves, you know? It had Anti-Flag written in pen on it. And I listened to it and I was like, holy shit. I mean, this is it, you know? And started looking more into that, that stuff. And then the obvious bands come along, like Green Day, NoFX, and
Did
whatever.
Did you read, like, Blunt Magazine at all?
Yeah, I was very into Blunt Magazine. And you just kind of, I guess, I went to an all-boys high school. And when you're into that kind of stuff, you're an outcast, you know?
Trust me, I know.
Yeah. and you just kind of somehow magnetize towards the other people that are like that. And I just got into music and myself and a few friends. I actually remember going to a Tweak show.
Dude, Tweak was the first album.
This is
like
quite an important part of my...
Well, I got bought for me. It was Tweak. That was the first album. Yeah.
So Tweak were playing in Cape Town at a CD store. And I went... I got my parents to drop me off there, and I didn't really know anyone else who was going to be there. And I bumped into an old friend who was at a different school, but we were friends from like kindergarten. And, you know, and then through primary school, the odd bri here and there, like when because our parents were mates and whatever. But I saw him there, and he was playing guitar. And that was like the moment where we decided to have like the first jam, you know. And that was kind of the start of my first band, which was called Dingus. And Dingus never really got anywhere, but you know, our biggest show ever was opening for Hog Oggity Hog and Half Price at the Purple Turtle.
Hey, that's amazing. That's a pretty good.
We got paid 52 rand in 2 rand coins. I'll never forget it.
You got to play a lot of pool that night.
And we actually each got a beer. There were five of us in the band, and we could each get six of us in the band. We could each get a beer for 52 rand. But yeah, so it was. And then, like, I kind of met the guys in Captain Stew through high school, and we used to, like, rehearse at break time, and everyone in the band was at the same school at that point. So, yeah, and then...
But that was a big band. Well, how big was the band at that
point? When it first started, it was 8 of us.
Yeah, damn, like...
And so we just, like, kind of started... Just the social circle just got a bit bigger and bigger, you know? And then now that was, like, close to 18 years ago. That I started playing, you know, like Dingus. We never really played any memorable venues or shows except for that one.
Purple Turtle.
But a lot of it was so DIY as well, you know, shows and people's birthday parties, like no PA system worth noting, like plugging a microphone into a guitar amp. But it was beautiful times, though.
The number of house parties I went to where that was, like, where the vocals were done through just, like, an amp.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it just... But those were hardcore gigs or punk gigs.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It really didn't matter. It was just so much fun, man. Like, the absolute best times were those kind of gigs, like, yeah, where no one cared, like,
yeah,
about the sound.
You know, and then there were guys, like, a bit older and more active, like, you know, the guys from Hog Oggity Hog, for instance. I mean... We owe so much of our kind of experience to them, and just taking us under their wing and helping us. You know, Lee was like, and still is, like such a mentor. You know, he's always a guy I can go to if I have questions or I need help with anything. And it's amazing for me that we get to like play music and collaborate with guys like Lee and Jay Burns. And, you know, like we did that whole split album with them last year, and he recorded some stuff on my solo album. And, you know, like, that's crazy for me. I mean, it's just like...
Yeah, because Jay, I really hope Jay is a legend. Rambling Bones is also just, like, such a dope project.
Yeah, like, man, it's like...
And it's kind of cool to see the similarities there, almost, like, between you two. And that, you know, like, he had a big ska punk band. He's still in a big ska punk band.
Yeah.
And then, you know, started a folk punk, you know, kind of vibe.
Yeah.
You're similar path. Yeah. Like, you were in a big ska punk band, and then...
Yeah, I mean, like, he's my idol. You know?
Straight up.
It's not that weird if I just want to be him, you know?
Is that it? You're just like, okay, this is what I'm doing. I'm just going to copy him.
No, but I mean, like, those guys, whether I've thought about it or not, they're, like, big inspirations, you know? And, like, and especially in a time where, like, I think, like, the sweet spot of, like, live music in South Africa, like, came and went quite quickly, you know?
Yeah, it was, like, a 3-year period.
And they were around before it, and they're around after it as well, you know? Like, that's a lot to be said for that.
And their shows are... Like, I was at a Fuzzy gig pretty recently, and it was lit, man.
We played with them just before we went to Europe in February, and it was, like, the biggest show we've played in Cape Town in ages, you know? And, like, they hadn't been to Cape Town since 2015 when George passed away. And they came back, and they were very kind of like apprehensive about how it was going to go, you know, because let's be honest, like that kind of music isn't very current.
No.
And they've like packed out Mercury, like over capacity, you know, like it was very special to see actually. And, you know, they even did a cover of John and Philip's song, the Hogs track. And yeah, it was just like a really cool and like emotional night, you know, to see that. The support is still there.
Because it is it's weird because like after like George's death, I can imagine a lot of the Cape Town scene, especially that scene, like how's it been? Like, I mean, it must have had a big impact.
Oh yeah, I mean, it had a huge impact.
Singer for Hog Hoggity Hog for you guys who are listening and don't.
Yeah, I mean, George's passing was obviously very sudden and sad, and it caught everyone off guard, but in a weird way, it really kind of like brought everyone closer together in some ways as well, you know, like I think it sucks that it sometimes takes something like that to change your perspective on things. But the sense of family and camaraderie really kind of like solidified itself. Like it was, you know, and then we did these little tribute shows for George, and the band played, and then there were a couple of guest vocals. And you know, in my musical career, that was like one of my biggest honors ever, to be asked to like fill those shoes and and front the Hogs for like in tribute to George, who was also one of our like friends and mentors and stuff. So yeah, it was it like, you know, it didn't really boost the scene, or like it didn't really change anything in that regard, but it really did kind of like bring everyone close, and we got to spend a lot of time with old friends around that, and kind of like the yeah, as I said, the sense of camaraderie and family and just support for each other kind of like really tightened up, you know. And I think it's still the same now, you know.
Yeah, because I think it's weird, because that's kind of what like what happens with scenes is you have this tight-knit vibe where you're in it, and it's, you know, like it's all consuming. Everyone that's in it is in it, and like you know what the vibe is. But then as time goes on, things stop breaking apart, you stop being as friendly with people.
I think that happens in any sphere of life, you know. People grow up, your tastes change, your kind of like, you know, your relationships and things like having families and getting married and your jobs.
You're not going to be at the pub every Friday and Saturday anymore.
So yeah, I mean that's just a natural part of growing up, you know. And that's why it was so special when Fuzzy played in Cape Town, and to see that people that you hadn't seen a show in like 5 years, or you know, they came out and supported, and you know, it's all there. Obviously, you can't do it as often as it used to happen because of people's lives and whatever. But it's
still special when it makes it more special though when it does. And it's like there's new scenes, there's new kids, there's new sounds, you know, that people are into essentially. But it's still cool that for us, for the older people, we do have these bands that we can still like whenever they play, like know that, hey, I'm probably going to see so-and-so there. Like, I haven't seen them in forever. But you as a musician, that must be super frustrating, because you don't, like, you get to, like, you know, I mean, you would ideally want people at your shows every single week, but you appreciate that they're there, like,
so when they come. I mean, that's true to a certain extent, but there's also this whole thing with, like, musicians where you got to understand that you can't just play to your friends all the time, you know?
Well, that
you got to have a strategy to build your fans. Yeah, you got to build your fan base as well, you know? So
yeah, let's get into this.
You can't take it for granted that your friends are going to come and watch you every weekend. I mean, if you do, you're going to be very unhappy a lot of the time, you know? And you take things personally, and you can't. You got to just accept that if someone isn't at the show, they either don't want to be there or they can't be there. I mean, it's not the end of the world. So
there'll be other shows.
Yeah, there will be. There'll be plenty of them, and you got to try and build your fan base. And however you decide to do that, you know, like you can just, you know, we played at S43 last night for First Thursday. The show wasn't about us. It was about First Thursday. And like we were super stoked to be there. And it was a completely new audience, you know, like we had a bunch of friends there, but I mean, it was a new audience. And those things, like maybe not entirely in line with our kind of strategy and how we want to push the band, but we super appreciative of that, those opportunities.
And you're also getting to open yourself up to different crowds. Yeah. So if one or two people heard you last night that had never heard you before and dig you, hey, now you got two new fans.
Totally. And we sold merch to people, and you know, people took the music home. And if we play to 300 people, there weren't 300 people there last night, but I'm just as a hypothetical situation, you play to 300 people, only 10 of them like you. I mean, that's 10 more people than like you had before. It's tough to wrap your head around those numbers. It's tough to wrap your head around it. Like, you know, I think maybe we've just been beaten down so many times in the past. We're just trying to like grasp at the positive straws, but I'm not sure, man. Like, you know,
I'm with you, man. Cause I feel those frustrations. Well, I even lashed out like online, like when, like I did my one man show at the comedy festival a few years back. And I had like a really nice, like, you know, audience there, but there were a lot of people that weren't there. And I was such a fucking idiot because I was focused on the people who weren't there, you know, after the show. Like, I wasn't like thankful enough really for the people who had actually come and supported.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, you know, I've been to all these shows, I've supported all these people, I've done all these things. But fuck it, like, your friends aren't your fans.
Yeah.
Like, create stuff for people who want to come and see you. And they your friends might not like the stuff that you make.
Yeah.
You're still friends with them.
Yeah,
like,
and they're just being supportive because you're their mate, yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, we've been treading that fine line for years, you know?
Well, like, I think any scene does that.
Yeah, and, like, and every time we make new fans, we just land up, like, inviting them to brides and shit, you know?
Yeah, that's a problem. I get people, like, with this podcast, it's awesome, like, but people I've never chatted to before have started messaging me and stuff. And now, like, I feel like we're friends because we chat, and it's like, I don't know what the relationship is. Like, because I'm just like, yeah, like, that friend-fan thing has always been, like, this contentious thing to me because I don't want a fan. Like, I don't want that. Like, the idea of a fan is weird to me. Like, someone who supports me, I like that. Mm. Someone who wants to enjoy my work. But I can't imagine someone thinking as highly of me as I think of the people that I'm fans of.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. You know, and it's weird, man, because, like, for instance, when we were in Europe or somewhere, and you kind of feel like, okay, I'm in a new place for the first time, and we got to try and make as many friends as we can tonight. You know, like, that's those weird little, like, things that you think about. And then sometimes you have to take a step back and be like, wait, I don't have to stay until 1 a.m. talking to strangers that I might ever see again.
I can just go back to the hotel, you know, or the backpackers.
I can just go, and people, you know, sometimes it's important to be the band and the audience, like, or, you know, or the comedian and the audience or whatever. Yeah. That relationship is important sometimes, to be like, I'm the band, you're the audience, like, we both need each other to, like, carry on, you know?
Yeah.
But sometimes, often, I'll be standing at a bar and it'll be, like, midnight and we got to wake up at 6 the next morning to drive somewhere. And then all of a sudden, I'll just be like, wait, I don't actually have to be here. Like, you know, I can go to bed now.
I don't know any of these people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking to some strangers and whatever, and there's only so many, like, email addresses you can try and remember on a night to, like, you know, oh, I've got a friend who runs, like, this little record label. I've got this guy who runs a little festival and whatever.
How many of those?
And those things do. I mean, every now and again, they do come around. Like, we've reached out. We try and reach out to everyone whose contacts we get onto. So, often, like, you know, we're chatting to someone and they'll mostly instigate the conversation and come up and say, I love your band, I saw you, I've got a friend who runs, like, a little inner city festival or something, you guys would be perfect for it, here's his email address, like, reach out.
I mean, that is a good way to get put on,
like, totally, yeah.
But at the same time, like, and I'm sure you've gotten a million rejections.
Oh, no, I mean, rejections isn't even the word. Like, we just don't get replies.
Yeah. You know? Well, as someone who gets sent a lot of music and a lot of stuff, sorry to everyone who I don't reply to.
Yeah.
But
no, but I mean, it's
that's the unfortunate side also of this thing is just so many people trying to make it.
Mm.
And so, I mean, I just know from my side of things that I can't listen to everything I get sent. Just straight up, there's not enough hours in the day.
I can relate, man. With Sit the Fuck Down, it's the same for me, you know? I'm like, I'm living both sides of the coin. It's like,
because you're trying to be heard, yeah, and you're trying to listen.
I'm emailing myself and not replying. It's like that, you know?
You should do some comedy, man. So you were in Captain Stew. How long did that go on for?
Captain Stew gigged for like 11 years, more or less.
Damn, that's a long time.
Yeah, we had a good run, man. It was really cool. And we achieved a lot, you know?
Yeah.
That was kind of like the heyday of live music within our generation. Like,
I mean, you platforms. Could tour with an 8-piece band.
Yeah, well, I mean, we cut it down after a few years. Because also just like, you know, differences in people's lives and whatever. Like, there were no bad vibes ever. But Captain Stew, like, existed when MK existed. And
yeah,
MK is such a missing link in the music industry here in South Africa. And you know, we managed to get into that little clique. And we managed to do those MK Oven tours.
Ooh, yes.
And, you know, even now I've got friends, like, I know that are going to be lifelong friends all through those little adventures. And, you know, like, MK was such an important thing because musicians and bands were, like, really kind of incentivized to release good recordings, good quality videos, because you were going to be charted and you'd be invited onto things like Studio One to play on live TV audience and, you know, and just have your song on rotation. And yeah, it was really important for bands to, like, up their game and, like, release good quality stuff so that they, you know, all of a sudden you're on national TV.
Yeah, because what was cool about MCAR was that there was this thing, there was this channel that you could put it on at any time and you would probably be seeing a South African band playing.
Yeah, totally.
Like,
it was like probably 90% local and 10% international.
Yeah, and the international stuff was like stuff that was like kind of current in the rock music scene. So it was like, it was putting it on the, like, within the same sphere as that, you know, like, you'd watch like the latest Taking Back Sunday video followed by like a Foot on a Dance video.
Totally,
you know?
Yeah.
And like that was a really cool avenue for us.
It also just like created this really amazing tour circuit, because all of a sudden you could play in places like Grahamstown, Bloemfontein,
because people knew
Potchefstroom, like smaller towns, but people, like the kids would know your music through MK, and they would come out in droves to like watch you and know two or three songs in the set. But like they were so supportive and so loyal, and also like bands like Foco Policica used like a launchpad like MK to like change and pioneer an entire genre, you know. Like it was a really important like tool. And we miss it a lot.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it's actually, it was like a multiple pronged like thing of that, of, you know, your blunts, your SLs, like the media landscape at the time, like gave credence to, you know, South African rock music essentially.
Yeah.
And that doesn't exist anymore, but it's also like print, like doesn't necessarily, there's a million websites that you can read about your music on. Mm. Like if I Google you right now, like, I mean, obviously I Googled you earlier, so I know this. There's tons of articles about your new album.
But they're all
like,
copy-pasted, aren't they? I mean, they're all the same article.
A lot of them are just your press release. Yes, that is what happens. But the problem is, and so no one reads that.
Mm.
Like, you see, like, all the music publications that are out there these days online, they are just doing that. They are just posting press releases. And, you know, if they post a review, I don't know, a lot of reviews I read are wanky and just, like, who is it for? I don't know. It's not for the reader. Just my personal opinion. It's not going to name names. So I do find, like, it's almost like, yeah, the media is almost letting artists down in a way. But also the media is suffering hard because, I mean, I shut my website down because it became pointless.
Yeah.
It literally, like, the numbers became a trickle because people can't access it, because if you put it out on social, it just gets buried.
Mm.
And so you now need to email people or WhatsApp them and, like, start badgering them. And, like, it just becomes this whole mess of trying to, like, yeah, just for the media to get in people's eyes. So I do think artists have it way harder now than, because before, like you say, you could get an MCAR, you could get in the same month, you could be in like three magazines, and people who would buy your music were reading those magazines and watching MCAR and going to shows.
Yeah, no, I mean, Ryan and I talk about this quite regularly. We're on that same page. Like, we understand that it was easier 5 to 10 years ago than it is now.
Which is crazy. Yeah. Like, you would think that, you know, stuff becoming decentralized with the internet would have made it easier for everyone. And it technically has made it easier for everyone, which has made it harder for, like, people to excel, I guess.
Yeah. It's just so saturated, you know, that's the thing. And, like, and this is global.
Yeah.
It's not just specific to South Africa.
You're not just fighting locally now because of Spotify, because of stuff like that. You're competing internationally.
Yeah. It's interesting. It is interesting. We could talk about it for hours.
But the cool thing is, like we said, though, it got you to Europe.
Yeah,
how did that actually come about?
So Europe came about for the first time for us, just with a kind of like, and I'm not ashamed to admit this, but just like a kind of general despondency about South Africa. Captain Stewart stopped gigging. The Shabs had just released our first album, and we had done a big tour around South Africa.
Which one? What was that called?
That was called Focus Dead.
Focus Dead, yeah.
and we had done a big tour around South Africa, like one of the biggest South African tours I've ever done. Played a lot of shows, like over 20 shows.
Like small towns, like Port St. John's.
Yeah, totally. Like the Kimberleys and the Grahamstowns and everywhere, you know, Port Elizabeth.
How did the tour go? Like, how were the shows?
Oh, it was cool, man. I mean, like, you know, like no one knew us, so some were way better than others, but in general, like, there were a couple of festival appearances on that tour, and
those are always
at the time it felt really good. I mean, it was like, but it also kind of felt like this is the best it's gonna get, you know. and that was, I also had a broken leg at the time.
Yeah,
it was a tough tour to do.
I remember that tour,
and
yeah.
I just like, I kind of,
you
had
play
this
Cool Runnings show.
Yes.
It was a dope show. The sun, the sun was going down behind you.
Yeah,
it was a nice one.
Yeah, it was cool. And I just kind of like, I had this thing in my head, like, I need to go away for a while. So I booked a flight to London. I had 3 months to travel, like, on a visa, and I just thought, like, let me go and try something different, you know? And I met this guy at a wedding in South Africa who owned a bar in London, And he said, if you find yourself this side, give me a shout. I can probably hook you up a few little shows. And he was kind of like just my first contact. And then I just tried to wing it, really. And it was unsuccessful, like in a big way. London was way tougher than I thought it would be.
Yeah, because they've got like their like a whole music scene, like 50 music scenes going.
Like, I managed to get into like one cool little clique, and you know, Frank Turner, like really.
Yeah, I've heard of Frank Turner before.
Frank Turner like introduced me to some guys who really helped me out quite a lot, which was nice. You know, like
I mean, that's a pretty good name to have hook you up.
Yeah, it was cool. Like I was lucky enough to open for him when he was in South Africa, and we kind of just stayed in touch, and He like it was quite ironic for me that like he being him like just levels above me, like on a completely different playing field, just still took the time to like try and help me out, you know, which is such an important like moment for me, because that's kind of why, like really, really like karma had my back, you know. And
but is that partially why you have set the folk down?
Yeah, dude, entirely. Forward? Like, I mean, I am fully committed to offering someone else one day the same things as like the Hogs and Fuzzy and like Frank have offered me in the past, you know, like we got to like pay it forward, you know, it's such an important thing. But I managed to get into like a cool little network there of guys who like, I mean, I didn't play loads of shows, but they managed to book me a handful. And then I was doing like the networking thing, going out to gigs, trying to introduce myself to people. I went to Berlin, which was even more of a waste of time than London.
wait, no. So this is going to sound very interesting to people, because it looks like Berlin's the place to be.
Yeah, but you need, like, oh man, I don't want to say the wrong thing, but you need money to be there.
I was going to say, yeah, if you want to busk on the streets and like you can afford to do that, then...
Yeah. So I wasn't in that boat.
So you'd say Berlin's more of a hit on the finances than a win.
Well, look, you can go busking. I mean, you can do things like that, and but you got to do a lot of it, you know. And the only thing that was kind of going through my head, and I don't mean this coming from like a high and mighty like place or whatever, but I was just like, I was standing on the streets trying to play. I didn't have any amplification or anything, and the sound of the city just drowns you out. And the only thing that was going through my head was like, I've worked so fucking hard to be here.
You come so far,
you know, and now guys are throwing coins at me, you know, and I've got to, if I want to make $30, I've got to stand here for 3 hours, you know, and I just couldn't get myself into the right headspace. I did go out once or twice and I had fun, and I managed to borrow an amp from my friend Gerdes. You know Gerdes? He used to play in New Holland and Sons of Settlers.
I've added New Holland to a playlist recently. It's been so nice to like hear them again.
Yeah, so Gerdes lives in Berlin and he wasn't there. So he was actually like really kind, and he let me stay in his apartment while he was on holiday in South Africa.
But that's very, and, very helpful.
Yeah, and Berlin's, he had like expensive, a battery-powered little busking amp that I could take out. And then it made it like instantly more fun, and I tried a few times. But like in general, I was just like, I couldn't wrap my head around it. I was like, I, this isn't for me.
Dude, you know? I've had those shows as a comedian. Like, we do a lot of shows for free. Like, a lot. You know, open mic is just, you know, to work your material, but also just to get stage time, and just a gig's a gig. But fuck, there are some nights where I have definitely just been like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Like, this isn't fun. This isn't fun for the two people watching me.
Yeah.
This isn't fun for me either.
Yeah.
Like,
anyways, I quickly figured out that, like, London and Berlin were not for me. And I was like, I was like kind of a few weeks in, and then I was like, why don't I just take the last 6 weeks
and
travel? And then Ryan, I managed to convince Ryan to come with, and Ryan was like, cool, I'll meet you in London. And then we go on a mission. Luckily, we could borrow his father-in-law's car. And so Ryan flew into London. We played like a handful of shows in England, and then we went through to like Switzerland and Germany and Czech Republic and Austria. And like a couple of those contacts were guys we had met before, and a couple of them were just like new things that we just emailed and reached out to, and we winged it, man, and we zigzagged through Europe, and it wasn't like sensible, and our car broke down, and it was a proper adventure. But like, we really managed to get into like a few little valuable networks, and those guys are just like, have become some of our best friends, and they really like, you know, it's amazing working with people who have so much faith in us, to the point where they can be like, you know, we're going to book you like 10 days in our country, you know? And then Mighty Sounds.
But that all comes from that initial like tour, working with them. And like,
yeah. Yeah. And you know, our good friend in Czech Republic, Vitek, he, when we met him, it was like, it was a strange time, because his brother, had contracted Lyme's disease, and he worked for like this festival called Mighty Sounds. He was one of the founders, which is like one of Europe's biggest punk rock festivals.
It's very big.
And so his brother, Prem, was really ill when we met them, and just after we left, he passed away. And VTEC landed up taking over like his responsibilities at Mighty Sounds, his older brother's responsibilities. So when we reached out, Ryan was like, VTEC, we're coming to Europe. Can you help us with anything? He was like, well, I actually have a slot for you at Mighty Sounds. And that was just like a very, you know, lucky
thing. That like bull, how many like bands on that bull? Like, and you must have got to see tons. So many dope bands.
Oh yeah, that first year we got to see really cool bands. Lagwagon played, Silverstein, The Casualties.
And
you know,
if anyone's seen your music video, your new one, they would get an understanding that you might like some of those bands.
Yeah, totally. Very much so. But yeah, then that Mighty Sounds day we played, it was like a Sunday afternoon, last day of the festival, 3 p.m. slot or whatever, in this like cool little tent. Kind of reminded me of the secondary stage at Splashy, like that kind of size.
Yeah, cool.
Just as we were about to play, it started pissing with rain, which was probably one of the luckiest things that's ever happened to us as a band.
Because
everyone came into the tent and we had the most pumping show. And that was like such a big boost for our European like status.
Because like a couple thousand people?
Yeah, I mean like
2,000?
Yeah, maybe less than that, like 1,500 people or whatever. But I mean like...
Still, that's 1,500 people I've never seen.
And we were playing as a duo. It was just me and Ryan at the time. We didn't have our drummer with us. And it was just like awesome, man. It was really, really great. And then we got invited to go back. And then last year we played like a 10 p.m. Friday night slot, you know, and it was amazing. And then after that, we did an acoustic slot, like a surprise acoustic slot. And the turnout at the stage was the biggest they've ever had for the stage.
So you guys are becoming a bit of a thing there?
Like, I mean, I don't know what a bit of a thing means, but like...
Are you playing shows there constantly that are... well supported, that people come out to,
totally.
Like,
I mean,
want you to like, yeah,
it's not on a massive scale, but I mean, for us to be able to like pull 100 people to a show in Prague, I mean, that's like fucking, it's a mind fuck.
That is a mind fuck. That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's kind of like where we're at there, you know, and like, and I mean, that Czech Republic has just been such an interesting kind of place where I never even thought I'd ever go visit there.
What's it like?
I knew so little about it before I ever went there. It's beautiful. Very underrated country. I mean, it's like obviously got a very interesting history. It's a very similar age to South Africa, and it's a new kind of like country status.
They're a little bit younger than us, aren't they?
Yeah, like the end of communism. No, I think they're a little bit older. Like I think it was the late 80s.
Okay, yeah, because I remember being young when the Czechoslovakia thing was a thing. Like, you know, like the breakup, but like I can't remember.
I can't give you the exact information either. But we're, I mean, they're amazing people. They're super friendly. The music scene is just unbelievable. Like the general day-to-day music fan is just so passionate and like so supportive.
I found the Europeans tend to kind of be like that. Like the Swedish cats also like super into like just like dark music, but
yeah,
heavy music.
We haven't been lucky enough to make it there yet. But I mean, it's interesting because each country is different. Like the Swiss, for instance, are super reserved, and like they come out and they support and
but they won't like talk.
But there's
and
like
shout
yeah, or... you don't really get a vibe. But then you'll finish a song and they'll go crazy, and then like they won't dance, so they'll just kind of stand there nodding their heads, and then you finish the set and they'll shout for more, and it's quite, and then you play the Czechs and they're like just
going
fucking
off.
Crazy stage diving and jawling and
okay
and
so
stuff.
It's a lot more like home.
Yeah, even a bit more intense than home. Like the Germans are very similar to South Africans, like and you know, we played a couple of cool shows in Austria as well, but yeah, like, you know what the interesting thing is in Europe is that like before you play your gig, most of the crowd knows whether they like you or not, you know, because there's this culture around like
so people come to see you.
Yeah, there's this culture around music where like, you know, venues put up rosters like weeks in advance. People can see what they want to like, what they're going to go and watch, you know, and if they don't know who you are, they're going to go and find your music, and then by the time you get on stage, they know some of the words and they know, like, you know,
I mean, I try to do that.
We've
with
had
South
this
African
conversation,
bands, but
yeah, and like, I was having this conversation with friends last night as well. We, in general, like, we do that kind of stuff, but there it happens a lot more, you know.
The thing is, like, I try to find a lot of South African bands and stuff, try to find their music, and a lot of the new guys just don't have stuff recorded, and like, that annoys me because there are a million recording studios now, like, of various scales, of various, you know, thing, but I don't need your stuff to sound like perfect, like, you know, to know whether or not I want to watch you live.
Yeah.
Like, get an EP out there. Like, it's just, if you're playing live shows, take that money and put it into a recording, please.
Yeah.
Because that is the biggest ad. Like we started this conversation saying that essentially for you, the recorded stuff's awesome to get to do and that it lives on, but you want people through the doors.
Yeah.
And have you actually done that? Have you reinvested the money, like, through the doors into recording, from recording into, like, you know, touring? Or how's that all work?
I mean, every project that we take on, like, as a band or even solo, like, just funds the next project. So, you know, like, recording is an expensive exercise. And nowadays, it's like, you almost got to write it off as, like, a marketing expense or whatever you want to compare it to. Yeah, well,
that is what it is, essentially.
You're not going to make it all back, like, but also, at least not quickly.
The way you're recording stuff compared to, like, you know, how people can record stuff if they just want to get a demo out there, you know, is very different. But, like, what you guys are doing now compared to the early days.
Yeah, but also, I think bands make a lot of mistakes in, like, sometimes you don't need to print CDs or you don't need to print vinyl or whatever. Yeah. Like, there's other interesting ways of being able to give people your music in a tangible form, like
USBs,
you know, USBs, but even things like buy a t-shirt, get a free download or whatever.
Yeah.
Because, like, let's be honest, the CD is just like a glorified business card. Vinyl is amazing because there's collectors and it's like, it's really cool and fun exercise playing records and whatever. But, like, yeah, in general, like, I think bands make a big mistake in saying, like, okay, I'm going to go and record. It's going to cost, let's say, like, 10,000 rand or whatever.
And then
I'm going to go and spend 15,000 rand on 1,000 CDs, which are going to sit in my cupboard for 4 years or 5 years. You know, like, it's quite frustrating to see young bands make that mistake sometimes, because what you should rather be doing is spending more money on, like, other things, like, you know, t-shirts. Like, either recording or other merch, or, you know, flights or, fuck, whatever you want to spend the money on, like, CDs. It's a dangerous game to play if you're not, like, an actively gigging touring band.
I don't know. I can't remember who said the, like, a joke about flyers. Like, here, you throw this away.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about CDs.
Yeah.
Like, it's nice to have. I mean, I've got a cupboard full of them, but I can't tell you the last time I put a CD into anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like, yeah, I'll just download it or listen to it online. But what's cool, like I said with you, is you had that awesome, like, book. So, like, it made it. Like, I had to get it, and, like, that's the cool thing, is you can do different things with packaging. And I mean, even with your new album, like, the packaging says something, it speaks, like, so for you, is it always about that, like, the whole package?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, we got this weird thing because Ryan's a designer as well, so we've got an in-house designer in the band, which makes life so much easier.
A few bands have that, like, and you can tell.
Yeah, but you know, like, we've got like a theme that runs, you know, and, like, we've also got, like, a rule that, like, if we print merch, we don't do it again. So, like, if you want it, you must buy it, because we're not going to reprint it.
Yeah,
you know, so we've got these kind of, like, hardcore super fans who buy everything we put out there, and, you know, and they'll have, like, a collection of Shabs t-shirts or whatever, and then, like, the CD will be slightly different to the vinyl, or the vinyl will be slightly different to this t-shirt or whatever it is. And, like, you know, like, we only print CDs specifically because we gig so much.
And you do sell them.
And, yeah, we do sell them because, like, if you're selling enough of them, then it's worthwhile. But, like, you know, we average maybe 2 a show or something. It's really not a lot.
Yeah, but the thing is, you're playing, like, 3 to 4 or 5 shows a week sometimes.
Yeah, when we're on tour. But, like, yeah, in general, like, South African, we don't sell nearly as much merch as we do overseas. But that's also because of disposable income and the difference there, you know? Like, Europeans have more money to throw around than we do.
Yeah, which is also why Europeans have been funding the South African music scene for the last, like, 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, so many acts have been going over there not just, like, the rock bands and stuff, like, lots of different acts, just because of disposable income. It's, like, it's not even just a matter of taste, because, I mean, in South Africa, like, people, you know, do support you guys and do love you guys, but even if the same amount of people come to a show, more people are going to walk away with a t-shirt or a CD from the one in Europe, just because they can do that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people here, you know, you're budgeting between your Uber, you know, your, like, 2 drinks for the night, entry fee, everything. At the end of the night, you're always weighing up.
Yeah.
Can I get a t-shirt?
But yeah, I think, I mean, obviously Ryan's skills as a designer are just, like, next level as well.
And they are.
And we, we're very lucky in that regard. Like, because people, it's the kind of stuff where people be like, whether it's a band t-shirt or not, they'll just want it because it looks so kiff, you know?
And that's the key. That's the, actually, that's the key. If you're like, if you are getting your own merch, please make sure it's something, not that you would wear, but that other people would wear.
Yeah. And you also want it to be good quality, because you don't want people to buy a t-shirt and then be like, oh, this sucks. I don't want to wear it again.
Remember the era of fitties.
Yeah. Like, we still use fitties, dude.
Well, the they used to be terrible.
No. We only get general good feedback on our merch. So.
Okay. So fitties had this era where they had the skinny shirts.
Okay.
Like, Low Profile had, who else? Oh, no, it was Vic Bay as well. So everyone was using Vic Bay, and Vic Bay were like terrible. Like, necks were stretching, everything. And everyone used fitties, and then they were just too tight. Like, really? They just shrank, and it was just, but that was like a decade ago. So I think both those companies have gotten a lot better at those things. So sorry if I'm throwing shade at anyone there. So with this new design, there's obviously a lot of throwback vibes. Like, do you want to like tell people the philosophy there?
So the album itself, just like, for some reason, just like a lot of the songs are just kind of like about like nostalgic kind of, you know,
I mean, that's a place in
forming
your life,
a band, like being in a band, like touring, like all this kind of stuff, and just kind of real, you know, like real to what we're living at the moment. Ryan conceptualized the design of just like a kid who's lying on his bed listening to music like we used to do when we were kids, you know, like that era doesn't exist anymore. I remember going home with a new CD from a show, putting it in my little hi-fi thing in my bedroom and lying and listening to it and reading the lyrics booklet or whatever and along to the CD. And like, I can't even tell you the last time I did that, you know? So, that, and then like just around the kid, there's like all these different items, like a skateboard and a backpack and an empty pizza box and a beer bottle, a beer can and whatever. And each one, if you look carefully, has the song titles written. And then you flip the disc around and the same kid is like, couple of years older, 20 years older, looking a bit more washed out and corporate with a tie on, and just all those little objects around him are missing, and that's where the song titles are. So yeah, just like, I guess it's a little bit on the dark side. I was like so stoked when Ryan conceptualized this artwork. And then, because also just within the song order on the album, we actually like delved quite into the, like deep into the lyrics of each song, and we made notes of what's what, and there's so like a little bit of like a, there's a little bit of like a chronological kind
storytelling.
Of story in within each song. So like the song starts off with a song called Tom and Phillips, which is in homage to the Hogs. And it's basically just, that's the one with the video we shot now where we dressed like we used to when we were kids and dyed our hair, and it's all about like just forming a band in your bedroom and like never making it, so that's how the album starts, with this like real positive, like, you know, go for it kind of thing. And then the last track is called Red Lights Long Roads, and that's about like losing a friend to like a drunk driving accident. So, and you know, just like kind of being a failure in certain sense, and like,
and yeah, that's a big reality for a lot of us.
Yeah, exactly. So like, and yeah, there's just like kind of this kind of like, you know, this stuff about like the evils of social media and the benefits of social media and things like dealing with depression and anxiety and just general kind of like weight of the world kind of shit, you know?
Have you found your music as you've gotten older drifted more towards that? Because you like, it was a lot more positive before. Not like, you've always had like, you know, darkness within your stuff, but you've always also had a lot more cheerfulness.
And yeah.
From listening to you talk now, it seems like, yeah, you're I think on a more realism scale, I guess.
But again, I would like to hear what you have to say after the album, because like, it's still positive at the end of the day.
Yeah, what I get from
what we're trying to say is like, if you're struggling with this kind of stuff, things are going to be okay, you know? Like, obviously it's a very general statement. Like, I'm not trying to like undermine people's like struggles in life and whatever, but like, you know, we've all got things, and like we're trying to encourage people to like not just bottle up that kind of stuff and reach out, and like, you know, I mean, you see this kind of stuff all the time, like talk to your friends, talk to your family, all that kind of stuff. And like, you know, we just really believe that like, even though we're singing about things that are very honest and very real and things that might suck for a lot of people out there, like, we're still trying to, like, put a positive spin on it and, like, just generally spread a good vibe. And
I mean, and that stuff's necessary because, I mean, I'm sure you had it and I know I had it growing up. You know, you would listen to kind of depressing songs that were also very motivating in their depression. Like, and they're like, because they were relatable. They were like, yeah, everything fucking sucks, but, like, yeah, we can overcome it. I mean, that's literally so much of punk music, so much of hardcore. And so that's essentially your thematic, like...
Yeah, and it's also conscious, you know, because on our travels...
You're going to deal with a lot of stuff that will make you depressed.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to stay as motivated as you would like to be all the time, and just, like, you're tired and you run down, and, you know, like, when the socializing starts becoming difficult, then you're just kind of like, fuck, you know, how do I come back from this? But on our travels, like, one of the biggest, like, encouraging pieces of feedback that we've gotten from new audiences is how positive and happy the music makes them feel.
Okay.
So, and fair enough, English isn't always their first language. But, like, we'll play
because the feeling is pretty positive. But because you've got, like, a bit of an Andrew Jackson Jihad vibe going on.
Yeah, they're definitely a bit of an influence. And, like, sometimes we'll play, like, on a, like, a... at a punk squat or something. Like, I'll use a great example is we just recently played at this punk squat in Berlin, and it was the owner's birthday, and he, like, curated the lineup, and he wanted, like, only German punk bands on the bill. And then our booking guy there managed to wangle us on, but apparently, like, we only found this out when we got there. Like, the owner wasn't that stoked about us being on the bill because he only wanted German punk. And German punk's like a genre by itself. Yeah, no, you know?
I can hear it.
It's not just punk sung in German. Right, it's like political, you know. So anyway, he also was insistent that his friend's band play last, and then the other band had to play first. So we were like fucking squeezed in between these.
And German punk's
it's very hard. Yeah. So we get squeezed in between these, like, two German punk bands. And, like, I was honestly shitting myself, you know? Like, the people there were crazy. Like, I mean, the punks and...
Well,
in,
it's a squat. Like, let's just... Yeah, just leather, mohawk, there.
Spikes. Like, fucking the full... Like, what do you expect?
Yeah.
And we played and we had a... Sorry, keep spitting. And we played and the crowd was nuts, dude. They were, like, super intense. Like, our drummer, his girlfriend was... just there by chance, like, on her travels through Europe, she met up with us. She got pushed over in, like, a little mosh pit, broke her wrist, had to have surgery. It was like a very intense little, like, crowd, you know.
And, yeah, it sounds like it.
But the biggest piece of feedback that we got after that show was, like, guys were so stoked and they were so happy. And these hardcore punks, which you, like, would walk past in the streets and, like, try not to make eye contact with, they were just like, we love your music. It's so positive. Like, we've just been listening to this, like, angry political bullshit. And then you guys come on with this message of, like, positivity and, like, you know, like, this happier sounding music. And we were like, fuck, cool, like, you know, and it was rad. It was really cool to just see people be people.
Yeah,
you know, there was no airs and graces. It was just like, this is who I am. I relate, you know.
How funny is that though? Like, we've grown up in the punk scene, but there's still some punks that, like, would scare you. Like, there's still some punks that I'm just like, ah.
Yeah, man. Now in Hamburg, I was walking around. St. Pauli is, like, the suburb in Hamburg, very much run by, like, a punk community. And we were, Ryan and I were on the hunt for some record stores to try and, like, give some, like, sell some records and stuff. And I was walking through this one park and there's amazing graffiti and like, it's just epic. And I was taking photos and I just hear this, like, shout, and I turn around and there's this, like, heavy, like, dressed leather punk dude. It's like winter and he's just like, he's just, like, fucking leather jacketed up. And he's, like, shouting at me in German, like, really angrily. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, man. I don't speak German.
Speaking
you know?
To Deutsch.
And he just says, fuck off, tourists. And he, like, points at the wall. And there's just this big mural saying, like, St. Pauli is not a zoo. Fuck off, tourists. And I'm, like, walking around with my camera. And I was like, oh, shit, I feel like a bit of a dick now, you know? Like, but that's, they're very real there, you know? Like,
and yeah, I guess the difference is, like, you know, like, the punk scene in South Africa has always kind of been a little more middle class. So, like...
Yeah. Yeah,
most other places it's been a lot more of a lower class thing, but yeah. I guess that's just our demographics of our country and, like, yeah, the social political.
But there's also there's a difference between, like, the political side of, like, the punk lifestyle and the genre of music, you know.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Like, massive yeah. differences.
Yeah.
So you're playing Durban tonight. You got Joburg next.
No, so tonight we're playing Durban. Tomorrow we go to Joburg. Yeah, and then on Sunday we're playing in Park Acoustics, yeah.
Oh, awesome. Park Acoustics, nice one to end. So this tour is a bit of a short one for you guys.
Well, it started on the 11th of April, South African leg. So we've done other shows around South Africa.
Oh, what other shows have you done? Sorry, because I know you did Cape Town. Yeah, so that's all I've seen so far.
Yeah, so we did 23 shows in Europe, and then we got back, and then we did Stellenbosch first. Then we came up country and we did Lush Festival and Splashy Fen.
Okay.
Then we went back home, we did Cape Town, and then now we're doing Durban, Joburg, Pretoria.
Oh, okay. So this is the... Okay, cool. Yeah. How were Lush and Splashy?
They were great, man. Like, Splashy was the first time we had played in about 6 years, I think.
Yeah. And what's it like? I haven't been back in years, so...
I was very impressed, to be honest. Like, I know that festival was kind of stale. When the last time we played, it was very frustrating, actually, like, just in all sorts of ways. And I wouldn't say I've been avoiding coming back, but I've definitely not been feeling very motivated to try and come back.
Like, you haven't been submitting.
But we got some good feedback from some friends, bands that played last year. And I managed to get us on the bill, and I was really impressed. It was very slick. The production was great. The sound was great. Like, the vibe at the festival was really good. Like, you know, they were just ahead of like the rain and stuff. So the place was like prepped for that. Whereas Lush, not so much. Like, okay. Lush struggled with the weather, but also amazing little festival. And I would love to see it on a year where the weather's not as bad. I mean, because also it rained, but like heavily. You know?
I mean, weather
it was
can
just
kill
before
you.
That like weather system like, hit. Yeah, you know,
like Millipop's taken a year off. Like,
yeah, we were at Millipop last year when it rained. It was a very similar kind of thing. Like, you can see that as a festival, they've got everything right, but the weather this year just really threw a massive spanner in the works. But I wish them the best. I really hope that they manage to recover.
Yeah, but Splashy has always been a slightly better prepared than most festivals.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're better prepared just means having a fuck off big marquee.
No, but also just like I didn't see a single bit of mud, you know? Like, usually Splashy is just covered in mud.
Yeah, festival.
They just covered everything in like wood chips, you know?
Walking around was
like a breeze.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, Afropunk did that this year as well. Yeah. I mean, those are the issues when you're a festival organizer.
But it makes such a big difference, you know? Especially if you're like a traveling band and you can't take your own gumboots and cooler boxes and things like that. You've got to rely on the infrastructure of the festival.
You've also got a double bass you've got to like carry around.
I was very impressed, and we also had a banging show, you know, and it was very kind
people
of encouraging. Like, I mean, touch wood, every show on the South African leg of the tour so far has been really solid, and it's really nice to see the support in our home country.
I was gonna say, you got three dope ones lined up at the moment.
Yeah, totally.
And you don't think it's because people have seen like your European success or anything?
Maybe it is. I mean, maybe we've upped the game on things like social media and working with Warren and Just Music and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's
helps.
The thing. Like, I've seen, but you guys have always had a decent social media presence, but like a much more concerted effort to be documenting everything.
Yeah.
And like every day, like you have your pets of like, when you're on tour, like you like have your, like your different animals and stuff like that.
But we're also just being a little bit more selective of what we want to do, you know, like we're very fortunate that we can be. We're not just playing shows for the sake of playing, which is phase that we've been through those phases before, you know, because you kind of, I don't know, you just feel like you need to keep momentum and whatever the case is. Like, obviously, when you have a new album, you got to be quite strategic about how you roll it out and what the plan is. And so we had a good team around us helping advise on those things. And it's worked, you know. So I think, you know, when we get back to Cape Town on Monday, like a week afterwards, we actually fly to UK and we start a 2-week tour on there as well. So we're not even close to the end of this tour yet. I mean, we still got a whole...
That's awesome.
11 shows in England, you know, so...
I was actually going to ask, what do you do once a tour like this ends? Like, after you've toured an album, like, you know, you've done multiple countries now, you've done South Africa, you've done more cities than most people play, like, their entire careers. Like genuinely, like, most bands in South Africa do not play anywhere other than the three major cities.
Yeah.
And so, now you're going to go to England... And then afterwards, you come and you sit down.
We sat down a few weeks ago and we kind of mapped out the rest of the year. So we kind of strategically have little local shows placed around. You know, we've got some other weekends up country as well. And then in November, we're going back to Europe for another run of shows. And then we've got some festival run. And we've got a run of festivals.
So you're never going to sit down
in Europe
for
next
like
year
a
again. No, well, look, I mean, the time in between, we are going to kind of focus on some other things, you know. I need to put a lot more effort into Sit the Folk Down, you know, like just personal relationships and things like that do take a bit of a hit when you're on the road for so long. And,
yeah,
you know, we need to be smart about it. We can't just keep, it's not even sustainable to just like operate at this level forever. But these opportunities are going to come around, you know, so we got to just
make the most of them.
Yeah, make the most of them, be prepared for them and whatever. But like, it's important for us to plan ahead, you know, like, because, you know, we are like in our 30s now and we have, like, Ryan's got a wife and, like, you know, jobs and things like that. And it's important to find the balance. And we're fully committed to pushing this band to whatever point we can push it to. It's just like, we're not going to be just playing the average little pub show every weekend just for the sake of, we're worried people forget who the Shabs are if we don't play, you know?
Was that why you did it? Like,
no, we go through phases, you know. Sometimes you need to raise money for something. Yeah. Or sometimes you just want to stay gig fit or whatever it is. Like, but I think we're just kind of in this headspace at the moment. We're like giving a real push. Like, by the time we get back from England, I think we would have played like just under 45 shows, you know, within the first 6 months of the year.
Yeah, that's not too shabby, especially since lots of traveling involved.
Yeah, so I think we'll just chill for a little bit, you know. John, I know our drummer Johnny's a tattoo artist. He wants to go and tattoo in Europe for a bit.
Cool.
Which is something he does every year. So like, we can never take that away from him, you know. We'll just try and line it up with that. Like, as he ends that, we'll join fly him and meet him and then start a little tour, you know.
And yeah. I mean, that is at least the cool, like, while being in a band, the cool thing about what you guys have achieved now, what you've got into now as the Shabs, is that you can do that, you know, that you don't have to be constantly gigging, that you're not so much worried about getting your name out there because it's out there now. It's about cementing that and building that relationship with fans even further, I guess.
Yeah, and we've still got lots of cool plans with things like music videos and general content, you know, like, it's not like we're going to go quiet. We're just going to...
You guys have always had fun music videos.
Yeah, thanks, dude. Yeah, we're going to try and keep it that way as much as possible. But yeah, we're just going to try something different this year.
Okay. You know?
Yeah.
Cool.
We'll see what happens.
I think that brings us to the end of this. Thank you so much for your time today. And yeah, I'm unfortunately not going to catch tonight's show, but I am looking forward to seeing you again very soon. Well, whenever I get to see you again, because I'm going to listen to the album this weekend and I'll let you know what I think.
Cool.
I love the title track. I really like, I think it's so fun. And it was interesting just to hear, a more electric side to you guys. So I'm excited to see where this all takes you.
Cool.
And it's been so fun, even though it's been from afar, to like just, watch you guys travel the world playing your music. We're like, fuck, man. Like, I remember fucking Monkey Easter and like just my car getting stolen and just fucking, memories with Captain Stu.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, dude. I appreciate it.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Cheers.